Thank you. It's up to sweet sit, and then our funny computer voice that comes in. Part of our recording process. So to the extent that can be jarring, just like, yep, such as how it is. And thank you, Tolan, for recording this. So lovely, as always, to sit together. And today, as you might have already intuited, what I'd like to continue the theme of and explore together these teachings around metta and kindness and working with the mind. It is said that with our thoughts, we create the world. And that which our mind ponders, so inclines the mind. And we know this, right? When we catch ourselves either perseverating on things that we can generate a certain quality of how we move in the world, or when we, I don't know if some of you have had the experience of being with someone and not really having a shared reality, that the orientations are so different, and then it's like, no, the sky is actually blue. No, it's red. And that sense of, wait, what's happening here? And it can be kind of crazy making, but it's that way in which when we can really believe all of our thoughts or really believe all of our feelings, we can concretize into a way of moving in the world, and how challenging that can become, both to undo it, become aware of it, and then the freedom that can come when we start to be like, oh, well, do I really need to, what if I don't believe this thought? So as Byron Katie shares, is it true? Is it really true? How do you know it's true? What if it weren't true? And how do we work with the stories that we tell ourselves about our own lives or about the people in our lives or about the way the world is? Being able to identify, the story I'm telling, is it true? Is it serving me? And keeping along with this idea that we are always practicing something. And how much awareness do we bring to that which we are actually practicing? If I'm practicing complaining, or if I'm practicing having negative thoughts about someone, or am I practicing a sense of gratitude and appreciation? But energetically, they feel different. And kind of the body can also then take on a posture, subtle or otherwise, of that kind of energetic attention, of what we're paying attention to, what we track for. Just like in the body, the tendency, the negative bias that's wired in us can be like, oh, my neck hurts, my back hurts, this hurts. Rarely do we wake up in the morning like, what feels good? I mean, maybe some of you do. That's not necessarily the first question I ask myself, but what might that be like to start really finding ways to incline towards that which is positive? And I am somewhat skeptical, is not the right word, and neither is dubious, but I don't love some of the stuff like, well, just imagine something beautiful happen and then it will happen. I don't think my personal sense is it doesn't quite work that way, but it's what can we control? Not so much, but we can start to exercise some control over this wild animal of the mind, right? And where is it leading us? That Joseph Goldstein speaks about Labrador Retriever mindfulness, that the Labrador Retriever is really focused on the ball. And then the smell of the rabbits, and then the ball again. And we can be led around. I've shared this before. It's sort of the ways in which the dog can be led around by his nose, and the way that we can be led around by certain thoughts that we have. And I want to share this portion from Christina Feldman. I love this book. This would definitely be my desert island, on my desert island list. She writes, metta is a commitment of the heart. It swims against the tide of one of the prevailing ideologies of our time that tells us how we feel about something is the ultimate authority that guides us on how we speak and act and relate. The myth of authenticity asserts that if we feel good about something, it's worth pursuing, staying close to, investing in, and befriending. The myth that reifies feeling as an authentic guide in our moment-to-moment relationship equally asserts that if we don't feel good about something, or we dislike something, or we're threatened by someone or something, then it is only human and reasonable that we push away, abandon, or ignore it, and do our best to distance ourselves from it. Looking at our lives, we see how many of our choices, strategies, and actions are guided by this myth, at times referred to as being true to ourselves. If we investigate this pattern without judgment, we may instead discover that being true to emotional habits, and I would add in here thinking habits, do not always serve us so well. I love this. It's so helpful. And I think so many of us struggle with this place of what's intuition, what's wisdom, what's this the patterning of the mind? And again, to quote from Joseph Goldstein, he's like, wisdom never comes from the thinking mind. It's an embodied congruence between the mind and the heart and the body. And how we, Marion Williams has a quote that I don't think I can pull out of the memory bank about this ability to, how do we know what voice to trust? Because many of the different voices or opinions can get a lot of evidence behind them and a lot of momentum. I'm like, oh, this is true. And I think part of this path of feeling into the wisdom, our own wisdom, is being able to discern, is this voice, is this line of thinking, is this emotion feeling reasonable? Not reasonable, I take it back. Reliable, trustworthy. Because to quote one of the Ajahn Sutita, the mind can be shameless, right? We think thoughts. Thoughts come out of nowhere and they move along. And sometimes these thoughts are judgments about other people, the othering that many people experience these days, the profound polarity here in the States about vaccinated or not vaccinated, or who did you vote for, or this, or the ways of climate change or not. I mean, there's many different ways we all know about how, no, this view is right, a commitment to fixed views. And in the Metta Sutta, what is said to be the sublime abiding, not holding to fixed views. When we know this, when we can identify, oh, this is a fixed view about myself, about another, about the world, there can be not only is the view fixed, but there then can we can cultivate from that fixation a solidity, a concretization that then can, when carried to its extreme in some ways, really enclose the heart. And I know back in my 20s, early 30s, when I was definitely doing a deep dive in therapy, like, what happened to me? Oh, am I such a mess? And this way that I had so protected my heart, which as a kid was strategically spot on. It was a great idea. But it took a lot of work to start unpacking or dismantling, sledgehammering that wall that I'd built up to protect myself. And how do we, and this isn't necessarily always from a fixed view, but a ways being able through this practice, and I think through this metta practice, that we can start to really examine and perhaps start to soften those walls, be it walls that come from a solidification around fixed views or the protection of the heart that was needed at a different time in our life. And some of us might be like, no, I still need it. Okay. And that's something else. That can be skillful. But being able to utilize the metta practice is invitation to be friendly towards all things, while maintaining our sense of discernment and wisdom, so we can make choices about who's in our life, who's not in our lives. But to allow ourselves to orient towards the nature of kindness and friendliness. I spoke last week about sometimes loving kindness is just non-aversion, and being able to relax into a more neutral place instead of carrying the burden of being aversive and not liking and the self-righteousness that can come with that, but sometimes feels good and empowering, but it's pretty shallow in its terms of its sustainable depths. Whereas when we incline the mind towards friendliness or non-aversion, or to pull in the heart, the cousin heart qualities, as it were, of generosity and gratitude, there can be a softening such that we can start to really be clear about how do I want to live? How do I want to show up in the moment to moment? Yes, in our lives, but being able to, again, this is a line from Christina Feldman, like, no task is ever greater than the moment right here at hand. It's not quite her quote, but the intention there is being able to, in some ways, bring our vision here, now, this moment. Breath in, breath out. How's the mind? How's the heart? Am I connected to my heart, or am I off to the races about thinking about something? The measurable kindness is not so much concerned with how we feel, but how we relate to all feelings, people, events, and experiences. Kindness is only meaningful if it is embodied, the ground of our speech, acts, and choices. And I think I read this line last week, and I'm going to intentionally reread it because I think it's so helpful in terms of this whole practice. In many ways, comes down to how do we relate to ourselves? It is a relational practice. And it doesn't always seem that way, certainly when we're on retreat and everyone's sitting silently and not talking to each other and not looking at each other. Or we're here on our little Zoom squares from different parts of the globe. It may not feel relational, but the invitation is at its root, absolutely relational. How do we relate? How do we relate to the broken arm, the toothache, the headache, the illness, the diagnosis? How do we relate to the annoying neighbor? How do we relate to parts of ourselves that we don't like, that we wish weren't here, or that we would prefer weren't a part of us? How do we want to relate? The pathway of metta has mindfulness woven into it. It's a path that asks us to remember that intentions, the intentions that heal and liberate all. And again, being able to couple the teachings of metta, the loving kindness, the friendliness, with the mindfulness as an avenue to, wait, what's happening? Can I slow myself down enough to pause in this moment? The awareness, bringing an attentiveness to what's happening, and then a slight bent, a slight twist or tweak towards a sense of friendliness to all that's here, the things we like, the things that we don't like. This poem I've read any number of times, forgive me, but I kind of can't help myself. And some of you may, I'm sure many of you know this, but Naomi Shihab Nye's Kindness. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go. So you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness, how you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop, the passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak it until your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore, only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread, only kindness that raises its head from a crowd of the world to say, it is I you have been looking for, and then goes with you everywhere like a shadow or a friend. And I love this poem. I have loved it for so long. And then I heard the poet speak about the conditions under which she wrote it. And I believe that she and her husband were, I think, in Ecuador, I think on their honeymoon. Those might not be reliable facts, but they were on a bus traveling, and the bus was held up and somebody was killed, and they, all of their things were stolen, and passports, money, nothing. And the reliance on the kindness of strangers, her husband hiked off somewhere to go get himself to an American embassy somewhere far away to get their passports. And she stayed in the village and she wrote that poem. And she said it just came through her as a man had offered, extended a kindness to her as a result of this, what had happened on the bus. And this way in which, even in the times that can be so challenging, can we stay alert for a sense of kindness that arises? In Rebecca Solnit's book, that is called Paradise and Hell, I think. And she writes about the kindness that really arises in these different disasters, starting with the 1908 earthquake in San Francisco and looking at what happened in Katrina and the stories that were so often told about the pillaging and all the violence and all the horrors in which one group inflicts upon another, or the marauding that can happen in a time of disasters. And she's like, no, that's not what happens. People's kindness has come through. People take care of each other. And with a disaster that has happened in Miami with an incredible condo collapse and the various endless amounts of disasters that seem to happen worldwide, the kindnesses don't get reported, but they're there. And how can we in our day-to-day start looking and tracking and attuning ourselves for where, to borrow from David Wise, I know that the world offers itself to us through this kindness. So what I'd like to do, if it's okay, is just do a somewhat quick, shortened, brief version of a metta practice, just which can really help. It certainly helped me personally. This was a transformational practice for me in the early days of practice of this metta practice as a way of inclining the mind, as it were. So I ask you to close your eyes. And first, just check in with the body, noting how these words are or are not resonating or landing with you. And letting yourself bring your attention into your own body, feeling yourself sitting, whatever you're sitting upon. And to offer yourself, if you want to put your hand on your heart again or hand at heart center, to offer the phrases, may I be happy. May I be peaceful. May I be healthy and strong in my body. May my goodness protect me. And some of you may have your own metta phrases, and by all means, use them. The words I'm sharing may or may not resonate. The words I'm sharing may or may not be irritating. Sometimes the metta practice can be bring a version up, okay? That this metta practice is both a protection practice for the heart. It is also a concentration practice. It gives the mind something to do, something to focus on. So you might not have any heart connection to it. Okay. Then we celebrate the concentration that can come. So again, letting yourself stay with yourself, this well-wishing, may I be happy. May I be peaceful. May I be healthy and strong in my body. May I live with ease. May my goodness protect me. And just letting the phrases softly repeat. Sometimes those last words, may I be happy, that can be an echo, like a ripple after a stone is thrown into a pond. May I be happy, peaceful, healthy, strong in my body. May I live with ease, regardless of the circumstances. And just allowing yourself to stay with yourself with these phrases. May I be happy and healthy. May I be peaceful. May I be healthy and strong in my body. May my goodness protect me. Noticing, as I said before, if there's a resonance in the body or an aversion, something in between, it's okay. May I be happy, healthy. May I be peaceful. May I live with ease. Maybe staying with yourself a moment or two longer, to whatever extent is possible, to sort of drink in these well wishings. And then to call to mind beloved teacher or guardian of some kind, and this could be the grandmother you actually had, the grandmother you never had, one of your teachers, perhaps whom you've never met, but just have been so inspired through their writings, someone who has been dear to you, and that this relationship is not complicated. There's not a lot of charge to it. There's a, I hesitate to say it, but I can't think of another phrase, but sort of a purity of connection. It's not a complicated relationship. That when you imagine sitting, having this person sit in front of you, the heart delights. There's a gladdening of the heart. And with all these words to kind of see who appears that might show up. Teacher or guardian or dear one. That's so easy to love. It might be a dog or a cat. And to offer this person these well wishings again, if it feels okay to imagine them sitting in front of you or maybe beside you. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be peaceful. May you be strong in your body. May your goodness protect you. May you live with ease. And sometimes I like, as a visual person, I can play with the offering perhaps of different flowers. This bouquet of well wishes. May you be happy. May you be healthy, strong in your body. May you be peaceful. May you live with ease. Again, noticing, keeping some attention in your own body. How does this feel? The sensation level? As you offer, as you shower this person with these well wishings, may you be happy and healthy, peaceful. May you be free. And then to imagine when it feels appropriate, when it's the right time, that this person may come stand behind you, or if they aren't already, sitting next to you. Feel into how that is. And then, in keeping your eyes closed, just kind of energetically feel into this circle of 34 of us scattered around the country and world. Imagine offering these well wishes to our Sangha sisters here, some of whom you may know and might have known for decades. Some, if you're first time here, you may not know anyone. But to feel into this well wishings, may you be happy and healthy. May you be peaceful. May you be free from suffering. And holding in your mind's eye this virtual sangha, this virtual circle of wise women. Imagining this connectivity of well wishes. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be strong in your body. May you be peaceful. May you live with ease. May your goodness protect you. Let these well wishes are traveling from woman to woman. The generative power of these well wishes. May you be happy, healthy. May you be peaceful. Strong in your body. May you live with ease. May your goodness protect you, knowing that you are included in the circle. As these well wishings pass between us, you are also blessed by them. May you be happy and healthy. May you be peaceful. May your life unfold with ease. May your goodness protect you. And to imagine again this generative power that's being created of these well wishes between us overflows the circle and travels in the four directions to the north and the south and the east and the west, touching all beings, those beings who are in prisons, those beings who are at weddings, those beings who are suffering from loneliness, those beings who are celebrating their joys, those beings who are sick and dying, those beings who are healthy and being born. May no beings be left out. May all beings everywhere be healthy and happy, strong in their bodies. May all beings everywhere live with peace and ease. May all beings be protected by their own goodness. Just allowing yourself to feel into, imagine these well wishes, touching all beings, no one's left out. May all beings everywhere be happy, healthy, peaceful, and at ease.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.